Adam.
I was just doing a favor to Aaron. It's always the favor.
Oh, it does not go on the desk.
Sorry, I don't know.
It's over there.
Okay, so I just thought we don't have so much time. Well, let me just speak briefly about one aspect of Purim. That's one that's a little bit, you know, maybe surprising or not surprising, I guess, depends on your point of view. In one respect, of course, Purim is the most, let's say, accessible of all the holidays, and the most, in one respect, amami, I guess one could say. You know, it applies to every, you know, level of the Jewish population. In some respects, it appeals to a population that, you know, perhaps, you know, is more comfortable with Purim, certainly more excited about Purim, let's say, than it is about any other Jewish holiday. Certainly the Daraisas. And even when we compare it in some respects to Hanukkah, and the switching of the, you know, the Simcha, you know, Mishta to Mishta v'Simcha, and the you know, what that means in terms of the nature of this particular Mishta, and the, you know, Chayev Adam Livisume, you know, Bipuraya alone, you know, even if it wasn't the, you know, Shira of Adaloyada Ben Baruch Mordechai Aror Haman, is something which, again, you know, definitely has left its stamp, has characterized this holiday in a very dramatic fashion. You know, the level of joy and the way that the joy is expressed in particular, because joy, again, the simcha is part of every Yom Tov. But clearly, the, you know, the unique features of how we express joy, the order and the emphasis in this holiday, is something that makes it, as I say, much more accessible, leading people to an incorrect impression, and that is that this is a kind of frivolous holiday, a holiday in which people can kind of, with impunity, cast off any kind of constraints, and in some cases, you know, that leads to, that's a little bit what we spoke about, I guess, in our shir lunch the other day, it leads people to certain kind of conduct and behavior, which is really totally antithetical to what Purim is really all about, because Purim is certainly primarily, again, it does have some of these expressions, but these expressions are intended and for a heightened consciousness and kind of a more flexible way of reflecting on very serious aspects of national identity, which we spoke about. There's much more to say. Hashkacha, much more to say about that. But the themes of Purim really are very consistent with tefillah and a certain level of hakna'a. I always like to point out that Rav Amram Gon, you know, was of the opinion that you should say tachanun on Purim. So we don't do that, clearly. But the way he writes it is very not only enlightening, but inspiring. That's, it's a day of you know, being confident that tefillos are heard, and it's a game changer in terms of people's you know, perspective on life. But that can be lost sometimes in the jubilant, you know, exuberant expression. So the key, obviously, in Purim is not to tamp down, you know, that exuberance, because that's really, you know, very much what the proper, you know, behavior on Purim is supposed to be about, you know, but to make sure that there's an awareness that is attached to it of what the goal is, and that's a very powerful combination if only one, you know, can accomplish it. But the first step in accomplishing, I guess, is melachas machshavas, you know, to be aware of it and then to think about how to integrate the two. So part of that phenomenon is also a very central role, at least in Chazal's understanding of Purim, on the role of Limud HaTorah. And that's what I want to speak about. I think that's appropriate for this population, obviously. That's what we do. So it's interesting to note that Talmud Torah and Limud HaTorah play such a central role in Purim, something which is not, you know, a typical association, but again, beneath the surface, is undeniable, and I would argue is a linchpin, a critical component in appreciating in what's single-minded about this particular day. And this is expressed in zeroing in on certain psukim in the Megillah, the way that they were darshaned, the way they were understood. Each one of these kind of provides also additional room for reflection in terms of what about Limud HaTorah in particular is supposed to be emphasized or is connected to Purim. So we find this expression centering around several very important psukim in the Megillah, which again serves to reinforce the idea that this isn't just a coincidental or a tertiary, peripheral, expression, but this is part and part of what the day's experience, in addition to the other things, is all about. So, for example, in Parakhes, Pasuk Tazayin, and in particular, crescendo, after Klal Yisrael, staves off catastrophe and actually wins a war, Mordechai yatzal lefnei ha-melech, b'lefush, malchus tchelos v'chur, ater zahav gedola, tachrich butz v'argaman, v'ir shushan sahala v'samecha, and Chazal think, that he was wearing tzitzis and tefillin and all sorts of things, but, symbolic of, again, a reintroduction or a negation, neutralization of gzeros. And then we're told, Lehudim, this is in Pasuk Tazayin, hoysa ora v'simcha v'sason v'kar. So the simcha, the sason, and the kar seem obviously. You had a downtrodden people. They were depressed. They were at the, verge of extinction, in a state of crisis. Lech knos ayhudim. They were fasting. They were wearing sak va'efer. And now they're in a state of simcha and sason v'kar. But the ora part is a little bit, seemingly, it's the first one, and it's a little out of place. They didn't have a dark mood. Obviously, sak va'efer implies black and dark, and so on. But what is this ora? And Chazal tell us, we'll examine it more in just a minute. The Gemara in Megillah, Daf Tezayin, says that Lehudim Haisa ora refers to Talmud Torah. If I can find it here quickly. Each one of these represents some particular component. Rashi says each of these neutralizes one of the previous gzeros. The Gra is a perishon, a very fascinating perishon, Megillah Sester, and his comments strewn elsewhere that people have put together, says that lahashmid, laharog l'abed, that lahashmid is for the language of shmad, meaning like shasa shmad, implying a gzera against Limud HaTorah and Asiyas HaMitzvos, but that particularly Lahashmid means to focus on Limud HaTorah. And that's what the Gemara says here on Tes Zayin, Amud Beis, where the Gemara says, Lehudim Oysa Rav Simchav Sason Vikar Om Rav Yudah Ora Zu Torah V'cheinu Omer Kiner Mitzvah V'Torah Or. Again, Rashi commenting on this says, "Shegazer aleim haman shelo yasku b'Torah," and the Targum on the spot says about Ora that nitan lahem reshusa or something like that, right? Liosek or lasok, but I think it's liosek technically, b'Torah, which is actually an interesting language which we'll get back to. Esek haTorah, which has a very strong resonance in other shiurim that we've spoken about in the past. So on the one hand, right at the moment of at the cusp of victory, the first thing that we're told is that Klal Yisrael kind of commits, or the first benefit they had from their victory is to connect very ambitiously, right, to Limud HaTorah. But it's not just that, it's also, of course, the psukim in the end, even after the moment of victory, right? The next chapter, Parak Tes, is invaluable not only for the formulation of the L'dore Dora celebration, but also you know, for the perspective and the aftermath of victory. Of course, the moment of victory, you know, is one kind of jubilation, and it's one kind of response. And then, you know, with time comes perspective, and with perspective comes, you know, reassessment of, you know, the benefits and the gains. So, in some respect, the again, that the immediate, you know, response should be Ora Zutora is amazing, considering all the other things that they were contending with. But equally amazing, is also the prominence in Perek Tes, in the formulation and in the much later assessment, which also emphasizes the role of Torah. Of course, Kimu v'kiblu ha'yehudim aleihem v'alzaram v'alkol ha'nuvim aleihem v'lo yavor li'os osim ha'shneir mimo elo kichsavam v'chizmana b'chol shana v'shana. And that's, of course, the famous Gemara in Masachet Shabbos, and that Peches Amud Aleph, where the Gemara says that Maimed Har Sinai was, you know, a time in which there was Kafa Alehem Har Kigigis, Amrav Avidami Barchama Barchasa, Melamed Shekafa Kadosh Baruch Alehem as Har Kigigis, Amalehem Imatem Bekabla Matar Muta Vimlab Shomtei Kvuraschem, Amrav Acha Bar Yaakov Mikan Modor Rabba Leoraisa, Amrav Apo Bikain Hador Kiplu Bimeach Hashverosh. It's interesting that they call it Bimeach Hashverosh. Dechsib Kimu Vekiblu Ayehudim Kimu Mashikiblu Kvar. So again, this is in a very prominent place in the again the Kabbalah of the Pashtus and Psukim is again Alkein Karuli Yomim Elu Purim Al Shem Apur Alkein Kol Divrei Right Al Kol Divrei Hoy Geres Hazos Umera U Al Kako Mai Gi Alehem Kimu Vekiblu Ayehudim Alehem Alzarim Al Kol Nuvim Alehem. So the pashtus, the pshat in the pasuk, is that these words refer to the, you know, future commemoration of Purim and integrating the dore doros al zaram, right? I'll call anil the maleim, right? This is like the most ambitious pasuk in a way. You know, this Purim isn't just a, you know, a local, you know, event. It's not just, you know, for its time. It isn't just like a typical Megillas Tainis, as we'll say. But it's a L'dora Doros. It's called Anil V'Maleim. You know, it's something that you can, just like Maimed Har Sinai, that you can commit, you know, your children to. Below Yavor. So that this Pasuk should be understood by Chazal in such a prominent way as also a reformulation of Kabbalah Satorah is an amazing thing. That you're equating, as if to say, you know, there's no acceptance of Purim, or the equivalent of the acceptance of Purim is a rededication, a recommitment, to the totality of the Kabbalah. Indeed, the Rokeach in his Perush on this Pasuk, Kimu V'Kiblu, makes the Ha'ara that I really should have said logically, Kiblu, the Kimu. Right? First you're Makabel, and then you're Makayim. But he points out that it's actually the absolute parallel to, to Nasa V'Nishma. And that the reason it's the parallel to Nasa V'Nishma is because it's Kimu, the Kiblu, Kimu Masha Kiblu Kvar. It's a second rendition of Nasa V'Nishma itself. So that's the second one. We'll just elaborate each of these in just a minute. Then the third one is even a few psukim after that, right? Vayishlach svarim al kol ha'yudim el sheva ve'asrim medina, right? Malchus ha'chashverosh divrei shalom ve'emes. So the question is, what is divrei shalom ve'emes? What does that mean? So one of the things that we know it meant is the requirement of Sir to it. That's the Gemara on Tezayin, again in Megillah. Sir to it, Kamita Shel Torah, and we'll see what that means in just a second. Although I alluded to it the other day, so let me just expand on each of these and try to understand a little bit better why Talmud Torah, or why the recommitment of Kiva V'Kiblu, right, is so is really so central. So let me just start with the last one, because that's the easiest one to just take care of quickly, and that is the idea of Divrei Shalom Ve'emes. So the Gemara says, Sirtut Kamita Shal Torah, and the question is, what is this all about? I alluded to this over Shabbos, but Rav Elul has a very famous piece in which he tries to understand what the Rambam means. Ain't kosinus on the Gilah, I'm sorry. What the Rambam means when he formulates this particular halakha. The Gemara says, Divrei Shalom Be'emet, Tzrichim Sirtut Kamita Shel Torah. Rashi explains that Amita Shel Torah means that it's like a Sefer Torah. That part of the din of Megillah is that it's a Sefer, therefore has to be written in the form of a Sefer Torah, which also includes Sirtut. However, the Balitosis don't understand it exactly this way. Megillah Nikra Sefer and Megillah Nikra Igeres. Nikra Sefer Shem Tosso, basically the Gemara's discussion. And the thing that we discussed over Shabbos, namely it has elements of Sefer and elements of Igeres. And Bali Tosos were concerned, if this were the case, why doesn't the Gemara say that part of its being a Sefer was the fact that it needs to be written, right? Lama lanu krod de divrei shalom ve'emes, typically, right, mid nikres Sefer, right? And indeed, the Rambam, when he speaks about the requirement of Dio and Gvil, this is all Rav Elul Sa'ara, says that, you know, he doesn't, he says Kesefer Torah, but when he says it's Shricha Sirtut, he says Ketorah Atzma. So what is that? So the Rav Elul wants to conclude Eishel Daktik V'Lishon Rambam D'Linyan Adinim De'Einu Nechteves El Ala Gvil Ala Klaf Ben Litzferes El Begidin Nokat B'Lishne Kesefer Torah V'Linyan Din D'Shricha Sirtut Nokat Ketorah Atzma. So what is that? The Sefer Torah Bari Sirtut Einza Me'adinim Shel Sefer Torah Rakdi So Din Zeh Ne'mar Al Torah Atzma. The Torah Bari Sirtut B'Ksibasa. And Davrzeh Yeshlim Od Gam Medivrei Rambam, and he has other rayas as well. Meaning, Sirtut reflects a stature of Cheftza Shel Torah. And that's what we mean, Divrei Shalom Ve'emes, that the Emes, Kamita Shel Torah, means that the Megillah, that's what I was citing the other day, isn't just a story and a pirsum and a, you know, a record of a remarkable, you know, nace. It, of course, is all of that. But in addition to that, it is a special repository of Chafetz Shel Torah. And that's why it needs Sirtut. Ikar din Sirtut eino tali klal b'din Sefer Torah mezuzah. Rak ichar lacha ne'amar al Torah atzmo shetzricha Sirtut b'ksivasa. So on this basis, he explains not only the language of the Rambam, but the Hemshech of the Rishalmi. The Rishalmi says the following, see if I can find it. Uvema shekein heim advarim uvarim hejab Yerushalmi, Megillah Aleph Aleph, Rab Chelbo b'shem Rab Lezer Nemar, Divrei Shalom Vemet, Nemar lahalan emes kana altimkar, Harei kamita shel Torah. Ma zu tzricha sirtut, af zu tzricha sirtut. Ma zu nitna lehidaresh, af zu nitna lehidaresh. Harei lehejem, divrei Yerushalmi, that amita shel Torah is not on the Megillah, but on the words of the Megillah, al dvarim atzman aksuvim b'Megillah, but more important is what I want to bring out. Ukidinokat lo le'inyan shenitnu lehidaresh. The kayal Yerushalmi gam ledin sirtut ba'adi hach Dina de Nitan Lehidaresh, the Gam Din Sirtut Bahokitali Kamosha Kasabnu, Hein Hein Divrei Rambam. So, this idea that the Megillah is Cheftza Shel Torah, again, is something which establishes it as being something very special and unique. Again, I suggested on Shabbos that some of the singular features of the Megillah, in terms of combining Igeres and Sefer, and maybe it's midpoint status, maybe we'll discuss this in a minute if we have a chance, between Torah Shebichtav and Torah Shebaal Peh, But also this idea of being amita shel Torah, divrei shalom ve'emes, may be one of the things that catapulted it in terms of its status vis-a-vis other svarim in Kisgei HaKodesh. So it's a very interesting, divrei shalom ve'emes has a very significant, it's a very significant statement about the quality of Torah and the role that it plays in the Chefta Shel Megillah, and by extension, obviously, on the holiday itself. The Gra, commenting on Divrei Shalom v'Emes, says that Shalom refers to the Megillah, okay, and Emes refers to the Torah aspect of it, and he connects that to Kimu v'Kiblu, interestingly enough. The Malbim, a slightly different take, the Malbim says there was a machlokas about the status of the Megillah, that Esther was pressuring, you know, Kisvuni Ladoros. Some of the Anshei Knesset Sagdola weren't so sure about it. So they characterize it as Divrei Shalom Ve'emes, namely that the way to resolve this controversy, the way to seek Shalom, was through Emes. Now, it's to examine this question in an objective halachic manner, right, to weigh the merits of the case, you know, unemotionally or as emotionally as the emotional components, you know, qualify as halachic factors. So that's Divrei Shalom Ve'emet. It's the process which dictated or determined that the Megillah would be ro'oi, to be a part of the Chof Dalet Svarim of Kisvei HaKodesh. Indeed, it's an interesting... there's an interesting discussion, mostly among the Achronim, regarding Purim Meshulash. Some roots a little bit in some of the Rishonim, Yiri a little bit. I mean, what happens in a year where Yud Dalet is on Shabbos? Right? Certainly there's no Kriyas HaMegillah. We know that. That's part of the, you know, Gzeira, you know, Shema Yabi Renu. The question is, what happens with the Suda? So here there's a major debate, early and late, you know, what do you do in that situation? And there are a whole bunch of poskim who are of the opinion that we don't have Sudas Purim on Shabbos. There's a whole Yerushalmi, which is cited, also very fascinating, but not for now. So the question is, if you take that view, that in the Purim Meshulash there is no Seuda, what do you do with the fact that the Gemara in Masechet Megillah and Daf Lamed Amud Aleph, you know, speak about Niskarim v'Naasim, so the Zechira on Shabbos would be Kriyas HaTorah. That's what the Gemara says. What's the Naasim? What's the Asiya if Yud Dalet comes out on Shabbos? So those who are of the opinion that the Purim Meshulash does require a suit on Shabbos, said, well, that's the Naasim. And this Karim is Kriyas HaTorah. And the Naasim is the Su'udah. But if you hold not that way, if you hold that you don't make the Suda on Shabbos, so what is the Naasim? So I always thought that maybe this could be connected to the Gemara in Megillah, Avdalid Omer Aleph, right, where the Gemara says that in those circumstances, where you don't have Kriyas HaMegillah, very fascinating, I think. The Gemara says that Purim Shecholios B'Shabbes Sholim V'Darshim Binyano Shel Yom. This is not, of course, a din of Shol Shem Yom, which we noted doesn't really apply to Purim. That's quite different from Misha Nichnas Adar Marvin Simcha, as we noted. But this is a special halacha that Purim Shecholios B'Shabbes Sholim V'Darshim Binyano Shel Yom. The Gemara says, my Iri Purim Afiliyantif Nami. Moshe Tikkun Leim Yisrael Shiyu Sholim V'Darshim Binyan Shel Yom Pesach Pesach Atzeres Eretz Chag B'Chag. So the Gemara says Purim Itzrichu Ma'u Daseim Anigzor Mishum Derabba Kamash Malan. Right? Then the Gemara says Omer Rival Chay Vodem Likor Sasa Megillah Balayla V'Shanosa Bayom Shneimar Lakai Ekra Yomam V'Lo Taneh V'Layla V'Lo Dumiyali. So the original Havamina was, we talked about this a second, right? Lemikri balayla, that there would be Kriyas HaMegillah at night, right? Ulemisna masnisan dida bimama, and to learn Torah Shabbat Peh during the day. That lishanosam B'yom is like the language of, you know, v'shinantem livanecha, or it's a language of limud haTorah, means studying Mishnayos, and probably it's probably more. Then the Gemara says, Amar lehu Rabbi Yirmiya, lididima farsha liminei, through Rabbi Chiya bar Abba, kagon da'amri inshi, evar parsha sada v'itanya. He says, no, I don't think it means that. I think it means that you repeat it. And of course, this repeating is a very fascinating thing. The real question is, and this is not for now, you just say you read the Megillah twice, or the two krios of the Megillah are different. And the fact that it's the second time when you've already read it the first time, again, a lot was made over Shabbos about the night and the day, which is certainly part of it, because there are, in fact, two psukim. Itmar nami am rab chelba am rabula bira chai vadam likros esam megillah balayla vile shanosa bayom shenemar leman yizamecha kavala v'leidam Hashem alakai lalamodeka. So they're recording in the name of the Rav is really really based on Rashi, and this Rashi got a lot of press in among the poskim. Rashi explains, yim bazamecha kavod bayom v'lo yidom balayla v'haikro b'mizmar romimcha Kidilisani, right? B'mordechai v'Esther v'Haman v'Achashverosh, u'Krias Megillah, she'avachus she'mefarsim esaneis v'akol mekalsin la'kodesh baruch hu. So, earlier Rashi says, l'shanosa b'yom, zeichel neis she'yu zoakim b'meit sarasan, yom v'layla. And certainly, again, the first pasuk implies a more, sober kind of a tefillah-oriented kriya, and the second one more of a jubilant one the next day. And certainly l'shanosa, knowing already what's to come when you read it the first time, if you haven't prepared. But again, formally this is your first reading, so like you're hanging on every word because you probably forgot it from last year, and like you just don't know how it's going to happen, and you're like scared, and you're at the edge of your seat, and once you've read the whole thing, and then you read it again the next day, you can foreshadow, what's going to happen. So now it's the same text, but it's a totally different text. So that's a theory. That l'shanos, it's a different kriya during the day than it is at night. It's intended to be not just the different psukim, because of the different psukim, the different moods, the original connection to Tainus Esther, the second being connected to the Seuda, but also the experience itself, very much in the way that I began, not the Talmud Torah part, but the other part, which is the need to integrate, the sense of a seriousness and tefillah, an appreciation, the Rav Amram Gon, let's say, side of this, with the Adalo Yada, and the Simcha Mishta, and other parts of it. So you have, you have the Tainus Esther and the Balayla, and then l'shanosa b'yom, but you can't skip steps, and you have to, you have to understand the kesher that these are two sides of the same coin. But either way, what you see from this Gemara is that when it comes to Shabbos, that you substitute limud for kriyas hamegillah. The Rambam actually, when he formulates this, kind of downplays it disappointingly, says it's kind of just a din of heker. But I think for the Gemara, certainly, you could suggest that it's much more than that, that it's a true substitution. But even more than that, and I think that this line in the Gemara kind of supports against the Rambam, that reading where the Gemara originally thought that l'shanosa b'yom is limud haTorah. It's limud the halachos of Torah Shebaal Peh. So that's a fascinating thing. So in light of that, I thought also that maybe that's the naaseh, according to those poskim who are convinced that there's no Purim Suda on the day. So there's a Niskarim and there's a Nasim. And the question is, what's the Nasim? Maybe the Nasim is that's a proper Asiyah, because that's a significant action, right, to kind of immerse yourself in the halachos, in the halachos of the day. Either way, this is certainly part of, or certainly consistent with the idea of Kimu v'Kiblu, and everything that is implied by it. So it's interesting to note there's a well-known comment of the Tosas Yom Tov, which attracted a lot of attention. Tosas Yom Tov in Tainis, Perek Beis Mishnah Ches, but commenting on the Gemara in Rosh Hashanah, Daf Yud Ches Beis, Gemara in Rosh Hashanah Yud Ches Beis points out that Megillah's Tainis included many holidays, And all of them pretty much were, you know, abandoned. They were batel at a certain point, with the exception of Hanukkah, you know, and Purim. So what is it about Hanukkah and Purim, you know, that is, you know, so unique, you know, that they should have endured, notwithstanding the other Megillas Tainuses? The other cases were also very impressive. Certainly as Nisan, they were equally, or in some cases, more impressive. So what is it? So typically, the Gemara speaks about in terms of Hanukkah Persumei Nisa, and most people understand that that refers to both Hanukkah and Purim. But the Tosas Yom Tov has a comment where he says that Hanukkah was because of Persumei Nisa, and in Purim it was because of Kimu V'Kiblu. That's a very remarkable idea. And again, Kimu V'Kiblu is taken very seriously, you know, in numerous contexts. Again, I mentioned over Shabbos a very famous one. There are some Rishonim, it's a minority view, but who have a different gears on the Gemara in Pesachim and some Chesed days, where the Gemara says that Shavuos and Purim are both days that everybody agrees requires some element of Lachem. So the girsa that we have in our text is because, you know, the Mishta V'Simcha, Mishta V'Simcha, so it's a day of Seuda and so on. With regard to Shavuos, of course, the Gemara says, because Yom Shenitna Bo Torah. But the there's another girsa in the Rishonim, and a few different texts. And that is that even with regard to Purim, what the Gemara tells us that the reason that there's Lachem is because it's Yom Shenitna Bo Torah, meaning taking very seriously the idea of Kimu V'Kiblu. And again, the Rokeach's idea that this is Keneged Nasa V'Nishma, the order, obviously reinforces this idea as well. So this idea also expresses itself, I think, in the particular, or in the likelihood that there's a particular focus on the Torah that we emphasize on Purim. And that even though that is, you know, there is a Megillah, and unlike Hanukkah, for example, which doesn't have a text, nonetheless, even in Purim, the emphasis seems to be on Torah Shebaal Peh rather than on Torah Shebaksav. Again, when the Gemara was suggesting that, you know, Shabbos, you know, you substitute, you know, that they could have said you learn the Megillah, but they talk about, you know, learning the Halachos. And equally or more important, when the Gemara thought that, you know, at night you lay in the Megillah and at day you learn, again, they weren't talking about the Torah Shebaksav of the Megillah, they were talking about, you know, the Mishayas and the Dinim. So the truth is that this is something which is also very consistent with Kimu V'Kiblu and with Ora Zutora. With Kimu V'Kiblu, as is well known, because Medrash says that, and many, many Parshim point this out, I think in both of these, both in Ora and in Kimu V'Kiblu, but the Medrash Tanchuma famously explains that Kofaleim Har Kigigis, you know, how does that stack up with, how does that consistent with Nasa V'Nishma? So they distinguish between Torah Shebaksav and Torah Shebaal Peh. They say there was Nasa V'Nishma and Torah Shebaksav. Torah Shebaal Peh, you know, has myriads of halachos that really redefine a person's life and lifestyle. I would add, you know, that if you didn't have Torah Shebaal Peh, your value system based on Torah Shebaksav, you know, would be radically different. It's not just the imposition of details and minutiae, you know, to implement it, but those end up also distinguishing, you know, what it is that we emphasize and what we internalize, you know, and the culture that we, you know, promote. And that's very difficult. That's actually more difficult. We see this in our time. Every generation sees it, just that every generation thinks it's the first one to see it. That even more difficult than actually implementing, you know, the myriads of halachos, you know, painstakingly, rigorously, and properly, is, you know, having the, you know, the cultural courage you know, to embrace and to project a value system which is often at odds with, sometimes even antithetical with, the culture that surrounds you. Right? Being, you know, accepted by, in sync with, right, the society or population around you is a very, very powerful force, you know, in human activity and in human nature. So, Nasa v'nishma for Torah Shebichtav without Torah Shebaalpeh, you know, is a dubious, you know, victory. And this was huge chisaron, obviously. But the Kima v'Kiblu, then, is really a focus on Torah Shebaalpeh, you know, much more specifically, which I think is expressed in some of the Makoros that we just read. And the darshaning, the sirtut, the amita shel Torah, isn't, you know, the words are the same whether you have sirtut or not. The sirtut is symbolic, you know, of how they're organized. And again, as Velvel, I think, you know, very insightfully points out, you know, the kesher between the two Yerushalmis, you know, kamita shel Torah and nitan lehidaresh, but lehidaresh, of course, is the interface between Torah Shebitzav and Torah Shebaalpeh. And what I was suggesting a little bit over Shabbos was that the Igeris, you know, aspect of Sefer isn't just a kind of a downgrading of it and therefore a loosening of standards, but on the contrary, it's a different Cheftza Shel Torah. But it's an interesting question to ask, is it purely a Cheftza Shel Torah Shebichtav? I've mentioned this on other occasions, other years as well, or is it some sort of a kind of, you know, hybrid of Torah Shebichtav and Torah Shebaalpeh? You know, ein bedaktikin beosioseha, because we're taking that more impressionistic stance, you know, of, you know, lekula and lechumra, but especially I'm interested in the lechumra part. You know, you can miss the, you know, forest for the trees. You know, you need the forest and the trees. And, you know, sometimes, you know, the way to, you know, to give full attention to the, you know, to the forest, you know, is to a little bit downgrade, at least initially. You have to do both. You have to veer between, you know, being an Igeris and being a Sefer. In a way, that compromises, you know, the purest Torah Shebichtav aspect of it, which is, you know, the right one way to read it or the best way to read it or, you know, dicta kaosios and the trup and all these things. You know, but maybe the point is to create a kind of a hybrid, you know, between the two, and that works very well if it's Kibbu v'Kiblu, etc. So the idea that, you know, that this might constitute a reference to Torah Shebaalpeh is something which I think is very compelling. Moreover, we spoke the other day about the role of Purim in terms of national identity. I want to speak more about that, not now, but... And again, Torah Shebaalpeh, much more than Torah Shebichtav, is what identifies, you know, and what, again, dictates the special destiny and special legacy of Klal Yisrael. As we know, when we were talking a couple of weeks ago about the Beis Halevi, the last time we had a Monday, I guess, was 2 weeks ago, probably, and I was suggesting that the, you know, the transition from what might have been to what was isn't all bad. It's hard to say that, but it doesn't have to be all bad. Namely, the Egel revealed that the best way, let's say, to promote, you know, the centrality of Torah Shebaalpeh and its ideas was dafka by, you know, by having the Torah Shebichtav and a Torah Shebaalpeh that are separate, but, you know, that are mutually, you know, reinforcing. So we mentioned then that, you know, one of the views of the Medrash that Tosfos quotes in Gittin on Daf Samech about why it is that Dvarim Shebichtav, you know, so why it is that Dvarim Shebaalpeh should not be written down, and again why it is by extension, you know, that there is a Torah Shebaalpeh and not everything is included in Torah Shebichtav, was to kind of safeguard the uniqueness of Kedushas Yisrael, and right, they even quote the, you know, the pasuk Kizar Nechshav. In other words, if everything is accessible, then this isn't the legacy of Klal Yisrael. But the point isn't so much to, you know, to, you know, to to somehow, you know, prevent the nations from knowing the details of Torah. The real goal is a positive one, that is to invest, make, force Klal Yisrael to invest, right, in terms of their responsibility and their sense of being junior partners in this process, you know, in moving this forward generation to generation, and taking ownership of it in terms of internalizing it, you know, so that, you know, it can manifest and express itself, you know, in the ambitious spiritual way that it does. And once, you know, it's all accessible or it applies to anyone, then it loses, you know, some of that. So the idea that Torah Shebaal Peh in particular identifies Klal Yisrael, and all of this really is consistent with the notion of Torah Shebaal Peh. Some of the Mefarshim, later Mefarshim in particular, put some material together on Ora Zutora that also comes to this particular conclusion. The question is, and some of the Mefarshim asks, and the Nesivos asks this, and is Megillah Starim Perish on, has a lot of interesting things on the Megillah and other people. And that is, you know, if Ora Zutora, so why not just say Torah? Right. I guess they do ask the same kind of questions about, you know, Simcha and Sason and Vikar. So one answer simply is that the Megillah is meant to be read on different levels. And what I said before, which is that, you know, the fact that these psukim are as strategically placed as they are in terms of the essential story of the Megillah and, you know, transmitting this to the next generations and so on and so forth, that actually makes it even more powerful that in addition, you know, it has this, you know, barely hidden, you know, but very strongly, you know, promoted and projected in the world of Chazal, you know, messages. So I think that is certainly part of what it is. It's the multiple transmission of multiple ideas at the same time, Pshat and Drash and so on and so forth. But another element is that Ora, you know, is a great way, again, to accentuate Torah Shebaal Peh. And I've seen this mentioned by, you know, Sivas and others, much later writers as well. The idea, of course, connecting it to the menorah, as opposed to the aron, right? The Gemara itself says, Ki ne'er mitzvah v'torah or. So the idea of, you know, chidush, you know, and pilpul haTorah, you know, and so on, being associated particularly with or Torah. Actually, that a tziv likes it so much that, you know, again, he speaks about it all over the place, and Tetzava and Balosk, every time he can, pretty much, talks about the different, you know, Darkei Halimud, representing the different branches of the menorah, you know, and so on and so forth. But it's a very, very, very important and very well-known theme, obviously, and you know, again, particularly focusing on the capacity of Klal Yisrael to be junior partners, Torah Shebaal Peh, but it's also chidush and creativity in Torah. So, the idea that Ora Zutorah, you know, is something which is promoted by Purim, is really very consistent with, again, the idea of the thing that's possibly what the Targum has in mind on. You know, when he says Ora means Reshusa Li'osek Ba'oraisa. Again, Esek Ba'oraisa typically means not just Limud or Kriya, you know, but again, Lasok B'divrei Torah. You know, again, this idea that you're immersed in it and it's something which, you know, you internalize and redefines you. So the point is that despite or because of the more popular nature of the day, you know, we sometimes can miss, you know, this element, not just the somber and, you know, emunah side of things, which needs to, you know, which needs to be integrated, but in more in particular, even the Limud HaTorah and especially the Torah Shebaal Peh side. And I think that is also connected to the Kima V'Kiblu and a little bit to the question of Baltosiv, which people speak about in context of Purim. It's interesting to compare the Baltosiv problem of Purim and the Baltosiv problem of Chanukah. we can't speak about it right now, but the discussion about that in the Bavli and the Yerushalmi, and whether they are identical or not. But the Maral is a famous comment, with this will conclude, where he explains that Kimo v'Kiblu was particularly necessary, you know, because of the problem of Baltosif. He explains it in a more technical way, but I think the implications of it are much, you know, go much further than what he says. He explains that anything that you introduce into the canon of Torah, I think is a very powerful idea, you know, redefines it. You can't introduce something into a perfect system or into a holistic or homeostatic system, a system that is perfectly balanced, Torah Hashem Tamima, right, or, you know, Ramach Hevarim and Shasa Gidim, you know, without disrupting the balance, right? And therefore, it was necessary that there be, you know, so it wouldn't be baltosif and it wouldn't be disruptive or subversive or corrupting, that it wouldn't undermine what was already there or just not fit in. It was necessary to have a second Kabbalah Satara. Kimo v'kiblu, kimo mashe kiblu kvar. That recommitment, or that reinforcement, really, of the commitment, right, demonstrated how, really, the themes of Purim were not a hosafa, but in fact, you know, fit in. When you go back to the totality of it, and you look at the total picture, and it's, you know, it's not, you know, kind of grafted in an artificial way, you know, but it fits in, and it's part of that total commitment, so then it enhances, you know, rather than, as I say, subverts or challenges, you know, the perfection, you know, of the system itself. So I think that that's a very powerful idea, and that explains a lot about the Limud HaTorah emphasis of Purim. But I just want to add one final point, which I think, you know, is connected to that and maybe even more important, and that is that in the end of the day, the way to look at the story of Purim, of course, there are singular elements in it. And again, any holiday has that. Otherwise, everything would be the same. You know, we're always interested in what characterizes something as being singular and unique. But in the end of the day, to understand, it's kind of the flip side of what the Maral said, you know, that really the components, you know, as mechudash as they seem, really came from Kimo v'Kiblu. They really came from Nasa v'Nishma. That what really drove, you know, the events of Purim in the end of the day was the commitment and the application of the values of Torah to, you know, circumstances that were completely unpredictable and you know, had never occurred before. So Mordechai's response, Mordechai HaYehudi, he's always Mordechai HaYehudi from the beginning, and the fact that he is, you know, Lo Yechra V'lo Yishtachaveh, not just Lo Kara V'lo Yishtachaveh, but, you know, his principledness is reflected from the first minute and in such a manner that, you know, there'll be no question that he will stick to his guns, you know, no matter what the stakes. You know, so the assertion of principle and the assertion of being a Yehudi, which has that context, and the strength that it implies. And again, Al Tadami, you know, Lunaf Sheikh, you know, Rebach Vatzala Yamod La Yehudim B'Mokam Acher, Umi Odeim Le'ez Kazot Igat L'Malchut. Right, all of these things which trigger Esther's response, Le'ech Knos HaYehudim, you know, the role of Tanis, and Tzom and Tshuva. In the end of the day, as unusual as the story is, another way of looking at it, the right way of looking at it, and that's what Chazal do, you know, when they fill in the blanks, is to look at it as the application of, you know, Maimed Har Sinai, Nasa V'Nishma, to circumstances that were incredibly different than anything that had ever been experienced, you know, and yet, you know, a proper, you know, assessment and application, not infallibility, you know, by Mordechai and by Esther, one which made it worthy, Kisvuni Ladoros, and more enduring than other Megillas Tainioses, precisely because, according to the Tosfos Yom Tov, of the Kimo v'Kiblu, know, component of it. And therefore, it really is divrei shalom, you know, v'amet. And it's ora, ora zutora, you know, esek b'oraisa. So it isn't just the solution to the baltosik problem and that powerful point of the Maral. It's the bigger idea that, in a certain sense, you know, the story of Purim is totally sui generis, and it's also just another episode, you know, of applying, you know, the Mesorah, the Kimu v'Kiblu, as we have. And that surely is a major key in Talmud Torah as well. Okay. Stop here. Sorry, what's over? But...
Should I put this back in the basement?
No, no, no.
It's mine. Oh, it's yours?
Oh, it's not mine, but it's...
Oh, yes,
I mean,
sorry.
I stole this
okay.
You know, a long, long time ago from the basement. So my theft does continue. But the point is that there's nobody in the basement who's particularly missing this. Because I stole it, so I've been depriving them of it for... You know, for like 100 years or something.
I was in the Megillah, everything's a seventh year of his Malchus. Esther, I think the girl points that Esther was 6 when she was discovered, and when she was 7, married her, it was obsessed with her that Vashti was 7.
Oh, hi. Are we supposed to meet tomorrow?
Tomorrow,
it's a Thursday schedule. It's okay with you?
It's the same.
You're flexible.
That's amazing. So flexible.
Can I have you ready?
Tomorrow.
Okay, that's okay. Is that okay for you?
Because we're doing the left.
That's right. That's right.
Yeah.
So 3 should be okay. We have like 45 minutes. Is that good? Or if I need anything more,
whatever you want. 3 tomorrow is good.
Okay, go
ahead. Thank you so much.
So you want me to buy
sure.
Do I have my 5 o'clock
slots? Tomorrow?
Yes.
We don't even know the date.
Are we going to do tomorrow at 5? Let's try 4. I have a meeting at 3:45.
Honestly, it might be perfect for the candidate.
It should be okay.
We're
if
still
not,
like
we'll
removed
do it
from like the weekly
basement dish, or should I check?
Either one or the other.
And also, so
if we need to, can we push it off for next week?
So 7 is always related to nice and gracious, and there's 4 7s that I just alluded to in the Gila. So I was wondering if it's related to Maral's comment of fitting into a Masher Kibbutz Kfar. I don't know what our
that's so interesting.
Is, but
could
I
be.
Wondered.
I mean, I'm not into the whole numbers thing.
But 7.
But
I
hear you. I hear you. It sounds good.
That's
what I'm saying. It's not the kind of thing. I mean, I'm taking the Maral and applying it. You know, in
this
like
is
the things that
five,
I'm comfortable with.
Yeah, yeah.
And,
I wasn't comfortable, that's why I asked.
No, right, no, I understand. So the number stuff, I don't really... But I like it, I think it's interesting. I just don't... You know, update on that stuff, because I'm a little... Like, I've been over my head a little bit, but I hear it. I think, meaning it's not surprising you're saying that the typical, like, you know, categories are dafka being employed here, as unusual as this is, because there's something... A statement being made also.
Yeah.
This is unusual, but this is according to the rules.
Yeah.
I like it.
I just want to double check. I want to make sure that the decorator everywhere else.
Yeah, perfect. And again, it's right after the hour. Yeah. Okay, great.
So I'm just a small
in here.
Yeah. So I thought this idea also works really nicely with the fact that grandma quotes a specific name on her mitzvah, even calls it not to require the suda. It's not like the mitzvah. And he says it's supposed to be maybe from any kilkul during the suda. So like technically,
what I was saying also, because you have to. The stuff with the suda is. I mean,
the integration. Right, so the integration. I thought that was exactly the same point. You were trying to add it to the Torah, specifically right before the suda, to integrate the two sides of that coin.
For all these reasons.
Yeah, and the fact that he's considering it to be vaping from any kilkul. I don't think it means that like technically, like oh, you know, you're going to take it to a farm. No, like because then you're going to lose out on the cue of the suda if you don't have
the focus here of what's really important about it. Even doing your part, like the goal.
Yes. It's like a specific principle.
I don't know if it's as good as his numbers.
Someone was asking me on the time that I was on with Mamun, so we had to start Kasha, why don't we have Rapapa La Payetu behind it, we told of we gave this, it's kind of a slider that everything has pizza of Mamun to it, so he was asking me, but Maisa, if this guy, if the Tolda has his Mamuzan, so it still has a different dinam of La Payetu behind. So I thought that this is
right, which I know.
Yeah, but I think that's just relevant to how you read Kayote and Malaka. It's basically the same Machayev. So then this could
correct.
This
that's
could
what
work.
I mean.
Oh yeah,
that's
okay.
Exactly what.
And
I
with Surus, it's a different Machayev than by
right.
Regal. So
exactly.
That's why it's Lav Kayote. Okay.
That's exactly what I'm trying to say.
Okay, thank you.
I mean, I'm acknowledging that at the end of the day, there are still factual differences. Okay. But what I'm saying is because you know it's in the orbit of Chitza. And maybe that even transforms how we look at Mamono, and therefore conceptually they're much closer together. We're looking for something.